The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, I'll call this meeting of the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order. We have a busy day, some special guests, and also hearing a couple of bills, so it's going to be a busy day, and glad you're all here. Vice Chair Harder, have you had a chance to check over the minutes from the meeting last Wednesday?
Yes, I have, Chair Anderson, and I move to approve.
Sorry about that. What's the fine for that, I wonder? Anyway, we heard a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting. And having looked those over, all those approved, say aye.
Aye.
And nay, against the move, say nay. The minutes are approved. Thank you. And first up, we have a very special guest from the Minnesota FFA. And I believe there are some officers. And they're going to visit with us. We have Haley Chambers, Keely Runge, and Dessa Turning. So introduce yourselves, ladies, and tell us your position with the state chapter and to tell us all about FFA. Welcome to the committee. Who's going to start off?
Well, my name is Dessa Turning, and I'm currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State Secretary.
I'm Keely Runge, and I'm from St. James, Minnesota. I'm currently serving as the Minnesota FFA state reporter.
I'm Haley Chambers. I'm from the Medford FFA chapter, and I'm currently serving as the Minnesota FFA state treasurer.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Chair Anderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. We're here today representing the Minnesota FFA Association, which is a student-led organization that delivers premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agricultural education. Founded in 1928, FFA has grown to serve over 1 million members nationwide and over 15,000 members in the state of Minnesota. FFA is organized at the local, state, and national level, but the heart of the organization resides at the local level. And looking at the bigger picture, FFA is one aspect of the three-component circle model of agricultural education, which also includes classroom instruction and work-based or experimental learning. Together, the classroom, experimental learning, and FFA provide a comprehensive educational experience that prepares students for successful careers in agriculture, food, and natural resources.
Chair Anderson and members of the committee, you may have seen a handful of blue jackets walking around the Capitol today. We're actually on day two of our Agricultural Policy Experience Conference, which is very unique to the Minnesota FFA Association. We have 54 students from grades 10 through 12 that are attending this three-day conference, learning about governmental basics, as well as really diving into the committee process. Students have already taken part in developing some mock committee bills, and we'll go through mock committee meetings this evening with each special roles, whether they're a representative or a senator, or maybe an expert testifying on the bill. They'll go through the amendment process and then moving the bill to possibly approve or fail. Which is a really awesome opportunity for these students to dive into the process of what our legislators are doing here at the Capitol. Tomorrow, we will have over 300 students in grades 7 through 12 from across the state of Minnesota attending our Minnesota FFA Day at the Capitol. We will start with just kind of an introductory greeting in the basement of the Capitol, and then students will take part in meeting with their representatives or senators throughout the day, really sharing about FFA, agricultural education, and the immense positive impact that it has had on their life.
Chair Anderson and members of the committee, as Keely and Haley both mentioned, FFA provides opportunities for students just like we are this weekend. And for me personally, if I was not thrown into the FFA organization, I would not be able to understand what career I want to go into, just as many members we have right now do. Mm-hmm. So a little bit more on me. So like I said, FFA provides opportunities for people, especially career insight. If I was not in high school at Dallas-Cocato, and I didn't take an agricultural education course called animal science, I would not be majoring in animal science right now with a focus in embryology. So because of
my agricultural educator, Ms. Tracy Nelson, and because of the FFA organization, which allowed me to have a project in animal science, I kind of have seen all aspects that this career could hold for me in many different avenues. But if I didn't have FFA, I wouldn't know about that. So one amazing thing that FFA does, especially here in Minnesota, like Keely said, is highlight opportunities for the very diverse group of members we have. Right now, we're looking into ag policy. During the summer, we look at leadership. We have so many different areas that all kind of come together to prepare an opportunity for each individual that we have. And that all comes back to our agricultural educators. Minnesota FFA has a lot of wonderful, amazing agricultural educators that push these students to take these opportunities. We always say, if there's a door open, walk through it. That's what these teachers help us do. And I know that if I didn't have a teacher that pushed me to keep going with FFA and explore animal science, then right now I would still be lost with my career choice. So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, a lot of our students here are residing at the Agriculture Policy Experience. We would also like to highlight this year's first annual Agricultural Technology Conference, which we have students attending and learning about the different possibilities within agricultural technology and precision agriculture.
We'd just like to thank you all for your continued support of FFA and agricultural education across the state of Minnesota. And now, if you have any questions for us about Minnesota FFA or agricultural education in general, we'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Any questions from members? It always amazes me how well you speak to a crowd and how you speak to adults, so congratulations on that. Representative Gottfried.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for presenting to the committee today. You know, I'm just curious, we talk a lot about, kind of the turnover in farming and, you know, how a lot of folks are kind of leaving the industry at a generational point. Like, you know, you turn it over there's a time when somebody decides that they can no longer continue the business and they try to turn it over to their children or grandchildren, and it just doesn't happen because there's not interest there. Can you speak a little bit to how FFA may be turning that around, or attempts to turn around that trend where we're losing out on farms because of folks kind of giving up on it across generations?
Which one of you wants to tackle that one? Identify yourself and then proceed. No pressure, Kaylee or Haley or Dessa.
Chair Anderson and members of the committee, I think that's a great question. For me personally, my dad is a first generation crop farmer, and so I've seen the challenges that it takes to get that business up and running, but he also was an FFA member, and I think that some of those things that he did in high school, taking on leadership positions within the Waterville Elysian Morristown FFA chapter, really helped strengthen his leadership, and he ended up getting a 2-year degree, and then he ended up starting a corn and soybean operation because he found a passion in running machinery and being a member of the agricultural industry. And he wouldn't have been able to do that if he hadn't had mentors and helpers to lean on. And I think that there's a lot of struggle in today's economy and things like that. But FFA definitely helps prepare individuals for real world scenarios, and especially in the agricultural industry.
Follow up, Representative. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just checking, do you still believe in the future of farming with a faith born not of words but of deeds?
Who wants to tackle that one?
Chair Anderson and members of the committee, yes. The first beginning line of our FFA creed now reads, "I believe in the future of agriculture with a faith born not of words but of deeds." The original version did begin, "I believe in the future of farming," but FFA has really recognized that agriculture is more than just farming, and we have thriving programs from all across the state in both metro and urban and rural settings, and we have students passionate about our organization's mission in any of those settings. So yes, 100%, we still believe in the future of agriculture.
I was going to ask, let's do a question first from Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I met up with some of you in the rotunda earlier, and I was a little surprised. I knew you would be into animal agriculture, but a couple of the folks I talked to were more toward like wildlife, DNR, habitat. Tell me more about that. How does FFA talk about that realm because I would have thought just agriculture. Thank you.
Dessa, would you care to take that
one? I can tackle it.
Good.
Chair Anderson and members of the committee. So one thing that Minnesota FFA and National FFA has to accommodate every different area of agriculture is career development events. So yes, some of us love animal agriculture and other people love fish and wildlife, but to be able to explore these different interests and passions, we have a competition-like career preparation event to prepare these individuals. So some people compete in the Fish and Wildlife Career Development Event, and this allows them to learn all about fish and wildlife and kind of test their knowledge compared to other members within the state. Or there's horse evaluation, there's meat judging, there is ag issues, there's so many different career development events and leadership development events that we have for members to explore so that they can gain knowledge in these different areas of agriculture.
Very good. Any other questions? I just have one final question. You know, as Chair Hansen mentioned, farming and agriculture are evolving. And it used to be, I think, most FFAers lived on a farm and probably had cows or livestock. You three ladies, tell us if you're living in town or in the country, and what would you guess, like your chapter, the breakdown, half and half, town, country, all three of you, what would you say to that?
Well, I'm from a very small town in Steele County. I think the population is around 1,200. So I live on the outskirts of town, right next to the high school, actually. So I do live in town, and it's, like I said, my dad and my family farm. And so I think that within the Medford FFA chapter, it's pretty split about half and half. There's a lot of members that do reside in town, and some of them have agricultural background out in the country, but it's definitely split. And I think Keely can touch on that. We have a lot of urban chapters that are very active within FFA and the state association.
Keely?
Chanderson and members of the committee, as Haley mentioned, we have a lot of really thriving programs across the board. Currently, we have 30 chapters in the 7-county metro area, but the breakdown of our percentages, 92% of FFA chapters are in rural settings, with 8% in metro and urban areas. I live in St. James, Minnesota, and we do have a family farming operation. My parents run a trucking company as well. So in my area, very much so more on the traditional side, but chapters like the Highland Park FFA chapter, which just received our premier chapter award, which is first place for their programmatic activities or their schedule of events that they put on throughout their chapter, school district, and community. They achieved that award this past year because of the work that they've done in this urban setting to help share the story of agriculture and find innovative ways for the students in their school district to learn about agriculture as an industry in their ag education courses.
Tessa, any follow-up, Tessa?
Well, Keely hit it pretty head on, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. The chapters that we have in our urban areas are definitely thriving in their own way. Sure, they look a little bit different from our more rural chapters, but there's nothing wrong with that. For me, I live in Darwin, Minnesota, but I graduated from Dowsett-Cokato High School, which is a pretty rural area. My graduating class was just below 200 kids. But in our FFA chapter, it was pretty half and half. We had members that lived in town, and we had members that, you know, couldn't make it to the chapter meeting because they had to go milk the cows. So we really see it all in Minnesota FFA, and that's one thing that makes our association very, very interesting is watching each, both urban and rural chapters, thrive in different avenues.
That's a quick question. You mentioned you're from Darwin, which is near Litchfield. What is Darwin famous for?
Funny that you mentioned that. Darwin is famous for Minnesota's biggest ball of twine made by one man.
Very good. Well, ladies, on behalf of the committee, you express yourselves very well, and you're outstanding proponents for ag education, for FFA, and for Minnesota agriculture in general. So thank you very much. Have a great experience, and we'll see more blue jackets around here tomorrow. So again, thanks, and have a great day. Next up, we have the Department of Agriculture, and looking at the AGREET program, we have several testifiers, and as they get ready, we will soon hear from them. But again, these FFA students, just an outstanding job they do. University of Minnesota and Department of Ag on the Agri program. Who's going to lead it off? Mr. Huguenin, identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. There we go. We've got our slides up. For the record, my name is Paul Huguenin. I'm the director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And while I'm very grateful for the opportunity to come and talk a little bit about the Agri program today, I must complain about having to follow those three individuals. I'm feeling very underqualified in terms of their speaking skills. But I do want to thank you for the time today, and especially for giving us enough time that we could bring in some of our grantees who can share their stories about participating in Agri and what this program means to them. They will also, at least a couple of them, will be able to share samples, and I want to reassure the committee we learned our lesson from last week's near catastrophe with the ice cream bars. Our samples have not left our site, so they are in the capable hands of the staff here. For newer members, the state of Minnesota invested heavily in producer payments that helped start the ethanol industry in the 90s and early 2000s. And the Agri program was basically created by the legislature to utilize those funds as those 10-year producer payments reached the end of their life cycle. And so that was the forward thinking of the legislature in 2009. There are roughly 15 different grant programs and cost share programs within Agri. And every one of them is detailed within the packets that you have. So not the PowerPoints presentation, but your packets have our full Agri report, which has all the details. I want to say thank you and express our gratitude to this committee for maintaining a reasonable balance between undesignated spending and designated spending within Agri. One of the ways I talk about it is that in any given grant program in any given year, the number of high-quality applications and the number of applications will vary. So having that flexibility to go between programs is really critical. It also is what allows us to create some innovative programs. The PROTECT program was created out of undesignated funds to help producers cope with the risk of high-path avian influenza. Likewise, the PREPARE program was created out of undesignated funds to help farmers prepare for drought, for hail, et cetera. I mentioned the annual report that's in your packets. It's really important to us to be able to be transparent. And so you'll see things like pictures in the back that will show you maps of where the funds went. We want you to be able to see where the funds go and how we're investing them. The other thing that you'll see in the appendix are details on each grant program that will show you who received it, maybe in most cases a summary of the project. But when we can, we're also including legislative districts. We want you to be able to see that information. If you ever find yourself wanting details about a specific project or maybe contact information about a grantee in your district, just let us know. We are happy to do that. This is the part of the presentation where I had intended to turn it to Ashley Bress, but about an hour ago she found out that not only she knew she was on jury duty, but she actually found out she actually has to report today. So we called an audible, and I'm happy to do this part as well. You know, obviously, we see all the same headlines and hear all the same things you do about the fraud that's happened in Minnesota and the high profile and the need to prevent fraud, and that's something that we take very, very seriously. A couple of things to note about Agri. All of our programs are on a reimbursement basis. So we're not advancing funds. People have to spend the money, demonstrate that they've spent it. The other thing where we greatly exceed OGM requirements is that we reconcile every payment request, which means when somebody sends in an invoice to us, they are going to accompany that with canceled checks, bank statements, detailed invoices showing what they purchased. OGM requirements don't force us to do that, but we have done that and continue to do that with every one of our grant programs. The other thing is we make site visits on any grant that's over $25,000. OGM requirement is $50,000. This committee is well aware of the fact that about 2 years ago, the legislative auditor audited two of our bigger Agri programs. In fact, they reviewed over $14.5 million worth of expenditures. And we were really proud of the fact that of that amount, about 1/10 of 1% was recommended to be reclaimed. And so while we're really proud of that, we're very happy about that. We know that there were things in there that highlighted that we could do better, and so we constantly strive to improve as we go along those lines. The last note on fraud prevention is, I think one of the things that is really helpful for us at the Department of Agriculture is the culture that we have, starting at the top with our commissioners. Everybody at the department knows that they are expected to have their eyes open. They're expected to raise their hand and say something if they suspect anything that just doesn't look right, that just doesn't feel right. If Ashley were here, she would talk about spidey sense. And we talk to our grant specialists all the time. Is there anything about this that just feels a little off? And it's that kind of culture and in training that in the last year alone, we identified more than a dozen fraudulent applications that we were able to catch before they were ever funded. But it takes everybody involved paying attention, looking for inconsistencies. And it takes subject matter experts who know their field, who know what's an appropriate request to build a livestock barn, what makes sense in terms of a food processing contractor. And so we feel really good about being able to stop that. And that has led us to put together a list of, you know, things to look for when looking at grant applications. So my take home on that is just know that we take it seriously. It's a constant journey, but we do take it seriously in terms of stewarding the taxpayer dollars. One of the programs I want to mention before we bring our testifiers up is the Make It Minnesota Cost Share Program, which is not something that gets a lot of attention when we do riders and such for Agri. We have staff who work with companies to go to national food shows. This week we have folks at the Natural Products Expo West in Anaheim, California, which is attended by about 70,000 buyers from across the globe, really. We have a pavilion of Minnesota companies with 11 different companies. The reason that we do that is we're able to offer them space at a discount because we're buying a big block of space and then subletting that to companies. We also get a much better location on the floor because we command a large space in advance. And so if you were to try to get a booth at Expo West, your location would be nowhere as good as being in the Minnesota Pavilion. We also build that camaraderie between companies. They're sharing information with each other. They're giving each other tips and tricks about what to expect on the show. And those are all really important things that we can do to help develop our food industry in Minnesota. This year, we're partnering with Explore Minnesota Tourism, and they've provided kind of top-level branding for us because we really want to highlight Minnesota as, one, a beautiful state filled with clean water, beautiful lakes, but also as this is the place you want to do business with to find food companies and agricultural companies that are second to none anywhere in the country. One example of a company that has been with us at at Expo West for many years is Seven Sundays. They started in 2011 at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. They now are available nationally and internationally at Costco, Target, Walmart, anywhere you can think of. And they started locally at the farmers market. They have manufacturing facilities in St. Peter. They source a lot of their products locally, including working with companies like Smoothies and others to source their raw ingredients. The balance of the time that we have today, what I'd like to do is we've got four testifiers here to share their story. The first you'll hear from is Mark Schiller with Loon Liquor, and he's here on my left. The second will be Pete Gengler to my right with Snowpack Foods in Caledonia. Their crew is also on their way to Natural Products Expo this week. And then we've got two guests who will be joining us online, Jennifer from McDonald's Meats in Clearwater. And I think you've seen her products come by. Please try those. And then the fourth will be Ethan Johnson of Amo Creamery in Heron Lake, Minnesota, and he gets the credit for the cheese curds that you've seen. With that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd love to turn it to Mark Schiller.
Just a quick question first, Mr. Huguenin. You mentioned your department does an excellent job with your grant disbursements, and I've heard that from the OLA and others, and you mentioned you had a list of kind of things to look for. Has that been made available to other departments, or is it appropriate to share that with other departments here at the state?
Mr. Chair and members, that's, yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Deputy Commissioner Vauble has mentioned, and I'll get the acronym wrong, but the Office of Inspector General Committee, Coordinator Committee. That acronym is a group of people from a lot of different state agencies sharing best practices, and absolutely, Ashley has been asked to attend that and share those things with other agencies.
Very good, thank you. First up, we have Mark Schiller, and then Pete Gangler in on deck. So, Mr. Schiller, identify yourself and proceed.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Anderson and members. For the record, my name is Mark Schiller, and I'm from Loon Liquors Distillery, Pizzeria, and now Flour Mill in Northfield, Minnesota. I also brought some couple of things for show and tell if you want to check it out. Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. Thank you so much, committee, for your support of the Agri program. The Agri program has been instrumental for our business throughout the last 10 years. We're a micro distillery producing a variety of certified organic spirits, vodka, gin, whiskey, and ready-to-drink cocktails. Since our inception, we have focused on making our spirits from locally grown organic wheat and barley, and have reached the milestone of over 90% of our ingredients by weight were grown within 10 miles of the distillery, primarily due to our direct partnership with our farmers, Brian and Tammy Lips, who farm right next to Bigwood State Park. I actually mashed about 1,500 pounds of their grain this morning before I came in, so I might have some grain on me. I apologize. When we built our new destination distillery last year, we were asked, are you going to have food? And this program has allowed us to take the risk of milling our own certified organic flour so that we can make fresh flour pizzas and look to distribute our flour. One out of the very, very few pizzerias in even the Western Hemisphere that mill their flour fresh on site. With the Agri program, we have been able to grow a tiny micro distillery in an industrial park with no employees to a tourism hotspot with over 20 employees distributing our made from scratch organic spirits in more than 400 locations in our state. We are poised for Midwest and national distribution this year. And these programs have been critical to achieving further funding from our bank, as well as the SBA. And thank you very much for your ongoing support of these critical programs. And I hope to see all of you in Northfield very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Schiller. Next up. Yeah, get right up to it as close as you can, Mr. Gingler. All
right. Chairman Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Pete Gangler. I'm from Caledonia, Minnesota, Snowpack Foods. We're a grower and a processor of organic frozen vegetables. We've been in business there in Caledonia since 1900. We had different businesses over the years, including a lumber business, building houses and barns, went back around 1900. My great-grandpa started harvesting ice in the winter. That's how we got into the refrigeration kind of end of things. In the 1930s, they built a locker plant and slaughtered and cows, pigs, chickens, everything you can imagine. And then they also started playing, they had farms, so they started playing around with freezing vegetables at that locker. So that's how we started in the vegetable business. Our label came out in 1943, and when they started getting chemicals more available, my grandpa and my great-grandpa didn't think it was a good idea and never went along with it. So that's why we always say we were organic before organic was cool. We kind of grew along with the organic industry as it went up through the 70s is when things started turning around and really having more interest in the organic markets. So as we grew with it, we just kept expanding. We farm about 2,000 acres in southeast Minnesota, and we work with about 30 to 40 farmers in that area annually. We have about 50 employees full-time, and they help us with planting, harvesting, processing, and packaging of all those vegetables. We produce about 10 million pounds of vegetables a year, and our products go all over the USA. We do some exporting to Chile and Colombia right now, and Canada. We also do some food service work, including farm-to-school programs. And we make ingredients for other customers, like Amy's Kitchen, for example. A lot of you probably see that. We started working with the Minnesota Department of Ag doing trade shows. Like you say, our people are going to Expo West today. We started working with them doing that about over 20 years ago. And they also helped us whenever we had questions about exporting and things like that. We're lucky enough in the past to get some value-added grants. The value-added grants that we did were to help us with food safety and also increase our processing capacity. Some of those things included use of UV lights to sanitize their equipment, trying to keep away from the chemicals, some easily cleanable processing feed hoppers, equipment to help sort the vegetables, printers and packaging machines. These allowed us to produce more organic vegetables, but also to ensure that we're offering safe, quality foods. We were also recently lucky enough to get an RFSI grant to build a freezer warehouse on site in Caledonia to help store our frozen vegetables. We got a $1.5 million grant, which will fund about 20% of our project. We wouldn't have been able to do it without that grant. We have been leasing freezer space for many years and trucking our product to warehouses in Wisconsin Rapids, Beaver Dam, West Salem, Marshalltown, Iowa, Albert Lea, and Austin. So we get a lot of trucking miles in doing that. Not only have to bring it to the warehouse, but as we package it, we have to bring it back. So we're building this 32,000 square foot warehouse. It'll allow us to store our product on site and also provide freezer space for other Minnesota businesses who are also in need of freezer space in southeast Minnesota. We would not have been able to take on this project or others without the help of the Minnesota Department of Ag, and have truly been a partner with Snowpack, helping in every way help us grow. I am very grateful. Thank you.
Any questions for either of these two testifiers? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gengler, when I drove through Caledonia on Saturday, it was a bit snowy.
8 inches of snow.
Just want to let you know that I did, on my land, Alan Hill was my renter about 20 years ago, and he did peas on my property. But that's a long...
Alan who?
Alan Hill in Harmony.
Oh, yes. Yep. Over by the cave.
By the cave, yep.
Yep.
What more could we do, you know, in terms of helping small processors like yourself?
Mr. Gengler, want to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman and committee, biggest thing I can think of right now is when it comes to food safety, I mean, we're like SQF certified, and it's a big, big deal. It's a big learning process for a lot of smaller processors as well. It's hard for a bigger processor. You have to have qualified people to do that. I think when it comes to education, that's a heck of a good field to get into for anybody for food safety. So if someone needs help with that, I would suggest something on that order.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a program, say, in the technical colleges that would assist in that? Do you know of any?
Mr. Gengler?
I'm not familiar enough with that to know.
Okay. Any further questions? I have one from Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say how important it is for us as a committee to hear from you all as grant recipients. How very important it is that we get to see the work that comes from the work that we do. So I really appreciate you being here. And I do have a question for you, Mr. Schiller. If we show up at the Loon Liquors, do you have samples whose actual cash value is less than $5?
Absolutely.
Mr. Schiller.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
You don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you very much for that question. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've been the president of the Minnesota Distillers Guild for the last 7 years, and we're getting more. I know it's not this committee, but we're getting more, you know, better and better at being able to sample our product. So.
All right. No other questions. We have two other testifiers. Thank you for being here, by the way. And 50 employees, is that seasonal or year-round, Mr. Gangler?
Year-round.
Wow.
In the summer, we go up to about another 5 to 10.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank both of you. We have Jennifer Dirks at Dirkus online, and then Ethan Anderson. And somebody who knows better than I will get them online.
I'm here. Can everyone hear me?
Yep. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hello. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jennifer Dirkus from McDonald's Meats in Clear Lake, Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I thank you very much for the support, committee support for the Agri program. It has helped our business immensely over the years. I think we've been with it for over 15 years with the grants. The biggest change for us is it increased our processing greatly. One grant helped us go from a 6,000 square foot facility to 20,000 square feet. Our size of our business, we have 50 employees right now between our retail and our production facilities, which are all in one. We processed, I believe, about 2.5 million pounds of product in 2025 through our shop. And that's between what we sell in the retail and what we do, what we call private labeling. We manufacture products for other customers and put their label on it. In that line, we do work with a number of local farms, livestock producers in our area that we process their animals for them. We label them for them so they can sell them at different farmers markets. They sell them to schools. They can sell them to a number of different outlets, restaurants, to keep moving Minnesota agriculture along. We have nothing to do with McDonald's, the Golden Arches. I want everyone to be clear. We get that. We have also, like the gentleman before me, we have been in the same family, in our same location processing, or have our store since 1914. So we're working on our fourth generation, trying to convince the fifth generation this is a good thing to follow the footsteps in. The grants really helped us expand our product offering to wholesale and retail customers. Right now, the reason I can't be there in person is a piece of equipment that came from Germany is being installed today, and so I was unable to attend. We got grant money for that piece of equipment. We're very excited because it's going to open up a lot of new products for us. I'm really appreciative of everything we've gotten from them. It's been a number of pieces of processing equipment for us. It's helped us grow and offer different products, different product lines, different avenues. And we've expanded our workforce and making agriculture stronger here in central Minnesota where we're located. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dirkus. Quick question. I believe we had small samples from some of your beef sticks. Do you have a website that if anybody is interested to order some, we could do that?
We do have a website, www.mcdonaldsmeats.com. That's actually one of our goals this year is to expand our website product offerings to tackle some of the shipping issues with shipping some of our products that require refrigeration through the duration of shipping. But we do have a number of the products. I'm thinking maybe some of them that you're sampling there, they're all available on the website.
Very good. Any questions from members? They were very good, too, by the way. If not,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And our last testifier is Ethan Anderson from the Emo Creamery.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members, for having me today. For the record, I'd like to state my name is Ethan Johnson from Emo Creamery. I'm from Amo Township, south of Storrdon, Minnesota, north of Heron Lake. We have been milking cows at this farm site since 1969. My family's been milking cows here in Minnesota for five generations, and we've been farming in Minnesota for six generations. One of the reasons I came back to the farm was the family aspect of it. When I was growing up, both of my parents were able to work from home, and me and my three siblings really enjoyed having my parents around and being able to be an active part of the farm and take part of that. And that's what attracted me to come back, move back from South Dakota, and be a member of my community and try to make the community better. One of the challenges that I faced when I came back to the farm in 2023 was rising shipping costs in our milk. In the span from 2013 to 2023, we saw a 2,000% increase in hauling. What once was about $200 a month to haul our milk now became $4,600 per month to haul milk. So when you do the math, that's almost double in 1 month what it used to be in 1 year. Reasons for that was just the shrinking number of dairy farms. In Cottonwood County, when my father was a kid, there was probably more than 100 dairies in our county. Today, there's only four. Those presented problems, and with my education that I got from Brookings, South Dakota, and food safety and dairy manufacturing, so making cheese, butter, ice cream, and bottling milk, I decided to embark on the journey of opening up an on-farm creamery on our farm. We've opened...
Can we get him back? He's just getting to the interesting part. Ethan Johnson, phone home.
All right, I'm back.
There we go.
Very good.
All righty. But, we opened in November 20th, 2025. Since we've opened, we've had 2,700 transactions take place in our farm, even though the closest town of 4,000 is 15 minutes away. We have residents of Iowa, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and people from all over Minnesota come visit our farm. We sell to 10 grocery stores already, and we do all this with 27 milking cows and making the highest quality milk that we can.
You're still with us. Oh, now you're not.
I'm still here. So we go ahead.
No, I was just filling time. Go ahead.
So we also work with 14 local vendors in our store, and we just tried to do our best to have as many local things and try to keep our dollars in the local community rather than export them out of our state. So that's our big goal.
Mr. Johnson, a question I have, if you are still with us, you mentioned people coming to your farm. Do you sell raw milk or do you process it?
We process our milk. Okay. So we have a fully functional pasteurizer, and we process our cheese.
Okay. Let's check on what county he's in and see what. Very interesting story. And
I'm back.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Just to kind of tie into that question too, part of the value added grant that I applied for really helped me narrow in my business plan and really helped select the process of building. And with the second grant I did receive from that program, I helped advance my food safety equipment in the plant, and I wouldn't have been able to complete the project without that help. So I really do appreciate it.
Very good. Mr. Johnson, do you also make and sell cheese on your farm?
I do. We do plain cheese curds, ranch cheese curds, and we do mild cheddar.
Oh, thank you very much. I guess we have a sample of it here. A question I have for you. We heard the Minnesota Milk talk to them last week. They were here, and somebody mentioned that if they sell cheese they manufacture on their farm, they have to sell, have to charge sales tax. Is that your case as well?
Correct. So when I wholesale to a grocery store, they would fill out an T3 exempt form, and they would not have to pay sales tax, and they would not pay charge a customer sales tax on the cheese. With my on-farm store, we'd have to charge sales tax to our customers. That's not the same way for butter, fluid milk, or ice cream that we sell in our store.
Okay, thank you. And I guess there's some sales and use tax compact that may impact that. But any questions from members? If not, Mr. Johnson, thank you much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes the educational portion of today's meeting. We have a couple of bills up on the agenda. Well, Mr. Hickman, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair, members, I just want to say thank you very much. We really appreciate the time, and it's really, I think it's helpful to let you all interact with some of our grantees and seek the diversity of businesses that have been around for hundreds of years, plus Mr. Johnson, where you've got a multi-generation farm, and he's finding a way to expand so that he can come back to the farm. And for the record, Mr. Johnson, I think is our youngest grantee. He is 23 years old.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Huguenin, and thank you to our testifiers as well. With the time remaining, we have a couple of bills on the agenda. First bill is House File 3580. Representative Burkle, would you like to move to the testifier table? And when you get set up, would you care to move your bill, House File 3580?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 3580 be laid over.
Representative Burkle moves House File 3580, and I believe you have an author's amendment, Representative Burkle.
I do. Can I do that?
Come up the bill in your order.
I can move the A1 amendment.
A1 amendment?
Yeah. And the A1 amendment would just change the dollar figures in line 7 on page 1 and line line 18 on page 1 from $125,000 each. The line 7 number is the wolf depredation line, and the line 18 number is the elk depredation line.
Okay, that is the A1 amendment, changing some of the dollar amounts. Any comments on the amendment? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we believe it's important for authors to get the bill in the shape they would like, and we would support the amendment. We believe that's an important precedent that should be followed.
With that, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And Representative Burkle, proceed with your bill as amended.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3580 is pretty straightforward. It's a similar bill from last year that passed off the House floor, House File 601. And still is sitting in the Senate. Really straightforward farmer-focused bill that addresses this growing and very real problem with wolf depredation across the state of Minnesota, and in particular the elk depredation in my own district back home in northwest Minnesota. Livestock producers and crop farmers are absorbing significant financial hits from wolf depredation and elk damage. These are not theoretical losses. They're dead calves, trampled crops, damaged fences, and for many family operations operating on tight margins, those losses matter. So as we've seen with the amendment, the numbers coming from the Department of Ag on where they stand right now with claims on the desk. That's the essence of the bill, Mr. Chair. I do have a few testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. My name is Caitlin Root, and I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. The MSCA represents around 1,000 members, and our mission is to create and maintain an economic and political climate that provides individual members the opportunity to sustain and grow the cattle industry in Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3580. Cattle producers in central and northern Minnesota are facing growing pressures from wolf calf kills, and producers in northwestern Minnesota struggle with elk depredation losses. These producers deserve to be compensated for their loss in a timely and reliable way. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources estimates there are more than 2,900 wolves in Minnesota. According to the 2024 USDA Wildlife Services Wolf Conflict and Minnesota Management Report, there were 252 calls for wolf conflict assistance in 2024, the highest number recorded and well above the previous 10-year average of 174 requests for assistance. Of those calls, 136 were verified wolf killed or injured domestic animals or public safety concerns, including 128 livestock and poultry depredations. Cow-calf operations continue to bear the brunt of these losses. Elk depredation presents similar challenges. The Department of Agriculture continues to exhaust available funding for elk-related fence and crop destruction. The delay in payments to producers shifts the financial burden directly onto farm families. This bill provides a practical solution by strengthening the depredation accounts so that verified claims can be paid fully and promptly. Minnesota's cattle producers are committed to being good stewards of the land and coexisting with wildlife. Increasing funding for wolf and elk depredation programs is a common sense step that protects family farms, rural economies, and the stability of our food supply. Just closing out, I was asked to acknowledge Minnesota Farm Bureau's support for this bill as well, as they were unable to make it today. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie, Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union, and I'm glad to share our strong support for Rep. Burkle's bill to increase funding for the wolf and elk depredation accounts to keep pace with those claims. I travel the state in the summer to give report outs on legislative work to our counties, and I'm always smart when I check the latest on these accounts when I go to those northern counties, because I know they're going to ask about it. It's something folks follow because they're experiencing those losses, or their neighbors are, and they see these accounts being oversubscribed. You know, 2 points just to add on to Caitlin's comments, but you know, at first, I understand there's new pressure on this program because the value of cattle is like the one bright spot in the agricultural economy right now. And for many producers, that's really important. So that reflects a really significant loss, particularly at this moment, and also creates pressure on the program. And then second, I can speak from, you know, family experience and certainly the experience of members that there is integrity in the program insofar as those wildlife officials are going out and confirming that it is indeed a depredation from a wolf. And, you know, we have plenty of members who, you know, haven't been able to make that case because they couldn't find a track or otherwise. So can speak to that as well. So thanks for your continued attention to this program and for your work.
Thanks, Mr. Laurie. Any questions from members from either Mr. Laurie or Ms. Root? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure who would answer this, but last year, I think when we were discussing the initial appropriation, there was concern about who would validate, you know, because the federal employees were being laid off or furloughed, and I think with the elk, maybe they had disappeared. They weren't there to do the validation. So could you maybe enlighten us on what the current status is of employees who can validate a wolf kill or elk depredation?
Representative, or you want to have somebody else come up?
I think Mark's coming up. Thanks, Steve.
Identify yourself, sir, and proceed.
Mark Abrahamson, I'm the Plant Protection Director, Department of Agriculture. So we have the clean programs for both wolf and elk. So wolf is as it has always been. So there are three groups of people who validate the claims, conservation officers, U.S. APHIS, Wildlife Services staff, and then county sheriff's departments in some situations. For elk, we did have a change. So in the past, we've had crop insurance adjusters who did the evaluations, kind of exhausted the people who were interested in doing that. So about a year ago, we began doing those evaluations along with, again, APHIS Wildlife Services staff. So for the last year, between MDA and Wildlife Services staff, we've been visiting all those claimants to evaluate the damage.
Thank you. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And have MDA, APHIS ever turned down an elk depredation account? Not because of no money, but just because of it wasn't elk.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Representative, we have. Last year we denied a claim just from lack of documentation for us to be able to put a quantitative number on what the actual loss was.
Follow-up?
No.
Question from Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, and thank you, Representative Burkle, for this bill. Wolf, my area that I represent, there's a lot of wolf depredation in, and one of the biggest challenges, and I know Commissioner Peterson gets some of the same calls, people call too late, or they've noticed a calf being gone or an animal, maybe it's been injured, but there isn't, they know it's from wolves, and but being able to, 100% prove that it is a wolf is, really ends up being an issue as well. And it's, in some ways it's probably good because then there ends up being, for those that we can prove, there's funds left over. But, I guess where I'm going with this is there's this cost to livestock producers is far higher than what is, this reimbursement amount is here. There's, I don't know what percentage it is, but I know that there's a pretty good percentage of animals that are lost and unaccounted for that is due to wolf depredation, and there's no proof of it, and my constituents are really frustrated with it. And I know that this isn't, in a lot of ways it's a federal issue, but at the same time, being able to adequately compensate for the loss is something that I think we need to take serious in this committee and try to come up with the funding to be able to do so. So thank you for this bill.
No question there, I just comment. Okay, thanks, Representative Hansen. Mr. Abrahamson, yeah, you raise a good point. You mentioned three different types of people who could validate a claim like this. Is there an order you see, first, second, or third? Can either a conservation officer or sheriff's department personnel do that as well as a federal officer? Mr. Abrahamson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the way that it works is a producer would call the U.S. Wildlife Service is basically the hub of dealing with the response. And then it may be a conservation officer, it may be a Wildlife Services specialist that would respond. That's kind of the norm. Kitson County, they tend to use the Sheriff's Department more so than the others.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Burkle, maybe you could comment, or Mr. Abrahamson, on the status of wolves nationally. We've heard it's been delisted, put back on the list again. What's the status currently?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, the House has passed the delisting bill. I think it's stalled in the Senate, as far as I know. But until that happens, of course, a wolf management plan in Minnesota is not going to happen. At least it includes hunting, put it that way.
And one of your testifiers mentioned that the latest count was about 2,900. Historically, is that a high number, low number, kind of average? Where do we stand in terms of the alleged population? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as I know, that number is higher. If you talk to producers in my area, they would argue that the number's higher than even what has been presented.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no questions from members, anybody in the audience who would care to testify on House File 3580 as amended? If not, any final comments, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just members, I think the data from the Department of Ag is clear, and they continue to fall behind as they struggle to pay these claims on wolf and elk depredation. The losses are projected to keep going higher. So this bill doesn't solve the entire problem, but from a financial standpoint, it does provide a meaningful way to target relief, and it recognizes that farmers should not be left to carry the full financial burden of wildlife that belongs to all of us. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to move House File 3580 to be laid over.
Thanks, Representative. With that, House File 3580, as amended, is laid over. Last bill up is House File 3566. Vice Chair Harder making her way up to the testifier table. And Vice Chair Harder, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, Sharon, I'd like to move House File 3556, please.
Vice Chair Harder moves your bill to put it before the committee. I'll present your bill, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. This bill stems from an incident that happened, it's a couple years ago, and it would have happened in Meeker County. The article is not in your folders, but I can certainly have it sent out to you so that you can see what this particular incident was. And there was two incidents that happened in Meeker County, and one of them was there was minor damage to a combine when a chain was drawn into the machine during harvesting. And the second incident involved what appeared to be a 6-foot piece of steel rebar pounded into the ground near corn stalk where it was hard to see. Now, whether or not this was intentional, we don't know for sure how often this happens. We are unsure about that as well. But from that incident, this bill was drafted to help address that particular problem. So Minnesota's agriculture sector just isn't a side note in our economy. It drives significant economic activity and supports rural communities across our state. Agriculture, food production, and related industries collectively generate tens of billions of dollars in economic output and supports hundreds of thousands of jobs within our state. As farmers, we balance tight margins, unpredictable weather, and rising input costs just to stay in business. Many Minnesota farms are operating on razor-thin profit margins. In this environment, every dollar we invest in equipment and every day we can operate in the field matters. Modern farm machinery, from planters to sprayers to combines, represents a substantial financial commitment. These machines are not luxury items. They are tools we rely on for planting on time, managing crops, safety, and harvesting at peak conditions. When machinery is intentionally damaged during planting or harvest, we don't just lose repair costs, we lose days we can't get back. We lose yield, we lose income. House 3566 addresses a real vulnerability in agriculture. It creates specific criminal penalties for intentionally placing hard objects in crops with the intent to damage harvesting or field equipment. This type of act isn't harmless. It can destroy machinery, endanger operators, and jeopardize an entire season's work. The bill also strengthens trespass protection when someone enters agricultural land with the intent of damaging crops or equipment. Farms are not vacant land. There are active work sites with heavy machinery, livestock chemicals, irrigation systems, and real safety risks. Most Minnesotans respect private property and the people who produce the food. This bill reinforces that respect in statute. This bill reinforces that private agricultural property deserves clear legal protection. This bill also sends a message that intentional damage or trespassing isn't a harmless act. It directly affects and harms farm families. House File 3566 is about safety, accountability, and protecting the people who grow Minnesota's food. Thank you, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Vice Chair Harder. Member questions on House File 3566?
the incident she referred to happened a couple of years ago, but the threat is there. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the incident was about in 2019. Is that correct?
Chair Anderson, yes, that is correct, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Harder, was anyone arrested or charged or convicted?
Chair Anderson and Representative Hansen, according to the article, there were no charges.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not the Public Safety Committee, and I think the bill is being laid over. I think we have sympathy if we have malice being done towards anybody. But you also need to have the conviction, if someone is doing the crime. So I'm not sure we've got anybody who has been convicted of this crime. Has there been anyone in the last 7 years that's been convicted of this type of trespass?
Vice Chair Harder?
Chair Anderson and Chair Hansen, I am not aware of any charges against somebody. This is something, it probably has happened, but whether or not you can pinpoint who it is or what the cause is, that is a difficulty within the bill. But to highlight the potential and real threats to farming is important. Thank you.
Follow up, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is being laid over, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Question next from Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hansen, I think you bring up a good point. I don't know if it would be good for this to be laid over or if it'd be good to go to either public safety or judiciary. So I don't know if, the statutes that are talking about, this is definitely an agriculture issue here, but, to property damage and whatever, I'm not sure if it would be best to go to another committee or not, but I think it brings up a valid point on, the jurisdiction of both thoughts, so.
For right now, for today, we'll keep it here in the committee, and if we visit and talk and feel it should move on to the Judiciary Committee, and if there's agreement, we would certainly do that. The point raised that difficult to prove this, I can't prove anything as far as the damage that was intentional, but I would just share with you that the cost to repair machinery is really expensive. This past year I was combining soybeans, and you cut right off the top of the ground, and I put a rock in my combine, I'd say a little bit smaller than a tennis ball, so not very big at all, but it went through and smashed the sieve in the back of the combine. The bill was about $3,000 for putting a rock in a machine that was a little bit bigger than a golf ball, tennis ball size. So yeah, the damage that they would do could be significant. And if, again, charges are filed and the court determines somebody is liable, this would be a good bill to establish some kind of precedent to. And I was surprised that misdemeanor is what the current charge would be for that. And a gross misdemeanor would seem at least very appropriate for intentional intent to damage farm machinery. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify on the bill? If not, final comments, Representative Harder.
Chair Anderson, we do have quite a bit of time here. And I just want to address something with also that Representative Hansen also brought up about have there ever been any instances. So I just want to share a short story, if I may. One of our farms is next to a property who likes to hoard things. And there was a time, this would have been about 2 years ago, there was metal or steel that was thrown onto our property. And luckily that day we were farming at during the day so we could see it. And on that particular case, somebody was caught because they had trail cams within the property. But we did not personally press charges. It was the owner of that particular property who they were stealing from. So I just wanted to share that I think that things do happen and we might know, but a lot of times we probably don't report it for whatever reason. Okay. But I do want to thank the committee for your time, for listening to this bill and gain a more understanding that there is a lot of risk to farming. And I just wanted to highlight that here today, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chair Harder. So, again, House File 3566 is laid over with the possibility of moving it on to other committees. Thanks, Chair Harder. With that, we are done a little bit early today. And with that, the next meeting is coming up on Wednesday, the gavel with Chair Hansen. And with that, members, we are adjourned.